Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 256, recorded June 30th, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers. Recording from our basement.
Because our swamp cooler will not be fixed for a week.
And it's 92 degrees Fahrenheit upstairs.
Which is really exciting.
So, and that's in the evening. So,
yeah. It's what, 8:45?
And so it's a little cooler down here in the basement.
So it's fine down here. Yeah. We had to move all the geckos and the isopods and things downstairs today so that everybody didn't bake to death.
Yep. So some more heat-tolerant critters and critters with large reservoirs of latent heat capacity are okay.
That would be the fish in the water.
Yeah, the temperature doesn't
Mr.
rise very
latent
fast.
Latent heat capacity.
But everybody else had to move. So.
So I have Tiki on my hand right now. She's going to be our special guest star, but she's probably not going to say very much.
Probably not. I've never heard her make a peep.
Nope.
But the crickets are crunchy. The
crickets are crunchy. She likes to crunch her crickets. Okay. Ooh,
What?
Do I get an alliteration? Well, maybe it's too early in the episode. Maybe it was so. Only two, but they were both CR.
That's true, crunch crickets.
Okay, who do we have today? We have Amy, who contacted us on the Aquarimax contact page, and Mick in Carnforth, UK, and Matt in Perth, Western Australia.
Okay. Well, let's start out with Amy.
Okay, she has a question about fin rot. She says, "Hi, I was wondering if you could help us out. I would be grateful for any advice at this point. We have four guppies we got in December. For over a month now, we've been fighting fin rot. All of our water parameters are always good. We have started adding a small amount of salt to the tank. They are active and eating well, but we cannot shake the fin rot. We used Melafix and Pimafix? Pimafix? I don't know.
I've heard it both ways.
Then we used Furan 2, now we are using Marisin 2 and Marisin. We are trying everything. We love these fish. I've done a ton of research online and everyone seems to suggest different things. It's very confusing, so we were just working our way down the list of meds we know of. If you could think of, if you think you could offer any advice, that would be amazing. Thank you."
Okay, and this began some correspondence that I had with Amy, and I mentioned that fin rot could be a complicated issue, and sometimes what may appear to be fungus could be bacterial. And so, since the fish were still active in eating, I thought that was a good sign. I asked her about the if the fish had been eating and active throughout the duration of this fin rot problem, or if they'd seen improvement, or whatever. And I asked her about video and pictures of the fish, and some exact water parameters, especially ammonia, nitrite, nitrate. If there were tank mates in with the guppies, what, if anything, had changed in the aquarium about the time the fin rot started, any additions to the tank, changes in maintenance, water sources, additions of plants, etc. So, she responded.
And she says, "Hi, thanks for getting back to me. So, let's get into it. There are no other type of fish in the tank. It's four male guppies, two albino sky blues, and two black moscows. Also, we have live plants, a Java fern and an Anubias. When we got the guppies in December from a breeder online, we were told they were 2 months old. We got the tank in the beginning of November and cycled it for a month. All of our water parameters from the day we got the guppies up to present are good. pH always at 7.6 and the rest always at 0. Never had any spikes. We have always done 25% water changes weekly. That is the only thing that has changed since the fin rot started, besides the addition of salt. We do more water changes because of meds. Nothing new has been added to the tank. From the time the fin rot has begun, they have all always been active and eating well. Only recently have I noticed one of the sky blues acting a bit sluggish, but he is still going after food and swimming about. I feed Hikari guppy food. Sometimes I switch it up with flake food."
I do like that food, by the way. Good stuff.
Yeah, Hikari does good stuff. "So we did the Melafix and Pimafix combined and added salt for quite some time and saw no real improvement. We went to the local fish shop and asked questions. He suggested Furan 2, saying that they may have built a tolerance to the Melafix and Pimafix. So we did a course of the Furan 2, and we saw no improvement. Then we decided to try Myosin 2. Is that like zithromycin?
No, I think it's the Marisin 2. It's just a typo.
Oh, okay.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. We did it for a week, still having symptoms. The box says you can do a second round, so that's what we're doing now, only we added regular..." What was it supposed to be?
Marisin.
Marisin. since it says you can combine them. We are trying to tackle the fungal and bacterial. I'm starting to wonder if it's nutritional, so I picked up frozen brine shrimp, and I am going to give them some of that tonight. We put in an order on Amazon.com for Jungle Fungus Clear, Canaplex, and Vitachem. As soon as the Vitachem comes, I will start adding that. Maybe it will boost their immune systems. Then we'll keep going down the list of meds. I don't know what else to do. I apologize, this is so long. I have a lot to say about this. We love these fish, and we are trying anything that may help. It's so frustrating to feel you are doing all you can and trying everything and no luck. That seems to happen kind of a lot with fish. I will get some pictures together to send your way. The fin damage isn't too bad. It's worse on some more than others. They look tattered and have red edges on the albino blues, and the black Moscows have white on the edges. If you can think of anything we haven't tried or any info you could send my way, I'd appreciate it. If you have any further questions, ask away. Thank you for taking time to read this.
Okay, well, and I replied again, and I thought it's great that they, Amy was going out of her way to help the fish. And
sounds like they're really working hard.
Yeah, really working hard. Mm-hmm. I was kind of wondering what to tell them, though, because I tend not to use a lot of medications, but I think in this case, they're just trying to do what they can to help these fish, pulling out the stops. It's kind of justifiable desperation because it's not, nothing's working. And there is often an issue with medications where you can use one and it might do more harm than good if it's the wrong one, and then weaken the fish further, and then you try a different one. That it could be a problem. But I think in this case, they were trying more natural things first, and it wasn't working, so they're kind of running out of ideas. So I suggested checking out Wet Web Media, which is a good website with knowledgeable people helping out with advice and help in situations like this. And so she said that she would try it, and then she said that one of their fish had passed away.
Oh. Yeah, she says, no, I'm not familiar with Wet Web Media, but I will look into it tonight. Sadly, one of our little guys passed away last night. I'm heartbroken over it. Going to keep trying for the other three. We're going to try Canaplex next, unless someone has a better idea. I want you to know I really appreciate you getting back to me. It means a lot. Do you have any thoughts on Canaplex? Believe me, we don't like using all the meds either. I wish the natural treatments worked.
Yeah, and I was sorry to hear that about the loss of the guppies, and was thinking about it, and I said maybe it would be a good idea to check the salinity, because some breeders will keep their fish, their guppies, in a fairly high salinity. You can actually acclimate guppies to marine water, full strength.
That's pretty nuts, I think.
And some people do that. And so I thought, maybe it might be worth checking and seeing if that's what's happening.
Ask the breeder what salinity level
Because sometimes guppies that have been in high salinity water will come back to fresh water, and it'll be kind of stressful for them, and so it makes everything else difficult too, and can kind of depress their immune system. So I was wondering if that was going on. And so I asked, and she said that that particular breeder didn't use salt unless there was an issue. So they had been raised in fresh water.
So it wasn't that.
But she did contact the web media people, and they said to leave the driftwood out, because they had some driftwood in there.
Okay, so she says, I contacted the Wet Web Media people, and someone has been helping us out. He seems to think our problem may be environmental. So he told us we should remove the twisted rosewood and Malaysian driftwood we had. It could be decomposing and possibly causing the fin rot. So we did that and added a few new plants, just to replace the open area that the wood filled. We didn't want them to feel stressed. So I guess for right now we're waiting to see if there's any changes after changing up the environment. He also suggested we have the water tested at the fish store. We did today. All the parameters were the same readings I get, pH 7.6 and everything else at 0. I want to thank you so much for suggesting I contact them. He has been so helpful. I really appreciate that. I am heartbroken over losing the one little guy, but we are not giving up.
Yeah, so that's kind of where the correspondence has ended for now. I sent an email asking her to fill us in if she gets any more information. Mm-hmm. It seems like they've got some leads to work on. Hopefully that works. So thanks, Amy, for contacting us, and hopefully you come to a resolution. But I thought I'd just open it out to aquariumaxers who may have had issues with guppies. I haven't had fin rot issues with guppies, so I had limited advice to offer. But if you have, and you've successfully treated it, and you'd like to share some information, that would be great.
That would be awesome.
So let's go to our next contributor.
Mick. Macon Carnforth. He says, "Hi, Russ and Kelly. Just wanted to follow up on my last email when I mentioned about terrapins and license restrictions." Oh, yes, we were talking about that, weren't we? "At the moment, all county and district license departments can choose to prohibit species as they seem appropriate. Our licensing office currently has no restrictions. We live in an area of the UK which is almost completely covered in protected areas of scientific interest or national park. We also do have a significant problem with red ears and similar species of terrapin at large in our waters. They can't reproduce as our summers aren't warm enough, but they can survive on our generally mild winters and live for 20 or more years. They have quite an impact on young waterfowl, and it is not unusual to see coots and ducks with leg injuries and youngsters taken out and eaten. We have a number of amphibians which also get affected. Even our local animal rescue center decided a couple of years ago to stop taking them in on account of the numbers coming in. It was handling around 200 a year on average. So many aquatic shops have missold red ears and yellow sliders to people in recent years. Most people are being told they grow about as big as your hand. We also have no restrictions on shell size at point of sale, so most come in from wholesalers about 1 inch. And admittedly, they are really cute.
That's why they sell them.
They're so little, yeah. Last year with the Ninja Turtle film, we had a flood of companies selling them for a few pounds each. End of rant. It's true. Every time there is a movie featuring an animal, any kind of, especially any kind of animated or computer animated movie, sales jump up.
Yep, and that's been the case with every time they've released a major Ninja Turtle movie.
Ninja Turtles.
Specifically.
Clownfish after Nemo.
Yep. And that's good to have some background on exactly what you're dealing with there with the various terrapins, and I could see why it would be a good idea to limit their sales in their particular situation. There is, it reminds me of when I was in Italy and I saw, I think it was in the city of Vicenza, I would see red-eared sliders, which of course are native to the U.S. I would see them in lots of places in Italy, but I remember going to Vicenza and I was in this park and there were so many red-eared slider turtles, it was ridiculous. And it was like everywhere.
Pigeons?
Yeah, there were so many of them. And it's because people get sick of them and release them. And they would sell them at the open markets, the little baby 1-inch ones. They'd sell them in the pet stores for cheap, too. And then people would release them. So, and in Italy, at least in vast parts of Italy, it does get warm enough for them to reproduce.
So then there are even more of them.
Yeah. So, anyway, I can totally understand why you'd want to restrict turtle sales, especially with people giving misinformation.
Right.
Because a lot of those species of turtles
get pretty big.
Get pretty big. So, yeah.
You have to have hands the size of Andre the Giant to make that statement true, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mick goes on, "In other news, I was having some good success with my new breeding projects. A few fry from the Limia and Patties?
Oh, it's probably just a typo. The platies.
Oh, okay, platies. And Cistrus fry growing on well, too. I bought a couple of grindle cultures from eBay, and they looked great in the packs. I set them up and decided to swish out the worms stuck to the side in my tanks to feed. They were taken readily by greedy fish. The next day, massive wipeout on about 3/4 of all my fish. All that survived are 2 adult female platies." He still said patties. "And 2 fry. Is it something else that I don't know what it is? I don't know. I was not a happy man. The blow was only softened by your incubator hatching all 18 corn snake eggs we had in. Some very nice markings and a couple of interesting color sports. I picked up some new fish at an auction yesterday, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed. We'll send some pictures soon."
I'm sorry
I wonder
about
what
that.
Was wrong with the
That's terrible.
Grindle cultures. Yeah, it's got groovy pictures here of the snakes hatching.
It's hard to
That's
tell what
really
could
cool.
have caused
that. It just
that.
Crashed
sorry,
again.
Sorry, it's crashing a lot. It's hard to hear
what
when something
be
like that happened.
In the grindle worms that
there could be a lot of things, but the fact that it was so sudden.
That's weird.
Is really weird.
You'd like think grindle worms with botulism or something.
Something
I don't know.
Really, really seriously toxic like that. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if there was. Sometimes when people make grindle worm cultures, they'll make it with various substrates, and I'm wondering if there was something in the substrate.
Something in the substrate
yeah.
that had gone rotten.
Like, well, what I was thinking maybe a pesticide in the substrate.
Oh.
Because, you know, pesticides affect different creatures in different ways, and some things that bug fish won't necessarily bug worms and vice versa, and I don't know. True.
That's really sad, though.
There's no way of knowing, obviously, mm-hmm. what happened, really, but just, oh, it's so sad. Especially when it's so sudden and you can't do anything about it. Yeah. You can't even try to do anything about it.
Because they're just over. Already
it's
gone.
It's just done. That's terrible. Sorry to hear about that, Mick. But the corn snakes, now that's awesome.
The pictures are amazing. You sent pictures of the baby corn snake actually hatching.
Hatching in process. It's really cool. And they're good pictures, too. So you can see them mm-hmm. close up. You see the really head emerging. And then you can see some of the newly hatched corn snakes hanging out. Look at that one. It's an interesting
pretty crazy color.
Yeah.
So we'll put those up for everybody to see.
I think there's one more somewhere, but it's not showing up. Sorry, my iPad is totally messed up. There's one of them with these two sitting on his hand or sitting on somebody's hand.
Oh, cool. It just didn't get in the document.
I tried to put it in the document. I thought I did, but maybe it got eaten because my iPad is
messed up. We'll put them up for everybody to see. So
yeah.
So you know what we're talking about.
Yeah. Good luck with the corn snakes and the new fish.
Yeah. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Should we go to Matt
Let's go to Matt.
Perth?
You know, there's sad news in every single one of our episodes, our contributors' messages this week. Sorry about that.
This is a sad week.
Even we have sad news because we're...
Our small car!
We had to relocate a bunch of critters. Okay, so...
We can content ourselves, though, that I have a dragon on my hand.
That's true. And nothing has died.
Yeah. Yet.
Well, it's
don't say that.
Knock on wood. Okay. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. My iPad is really having some issues.
That's where all the emails get put into a document for me to read to you.
Perhaps a tantrum would be the appropriate term in this case. It's just really falling apart. I rarely see it do this poorly. Okay, please don't crash.
Almost there.
Please don't crash.
Other news, we got to go see Jurassic World today.
That was fun.
It was really awesome. Except for the, you know, the total non-scientific bunk that's always in it. But it's still fun anyways.
Yeah, it is. Okay, we're just going to read it straight from the email because I can't get the document.
Okay, so this is from Matt in Perth, Western Australia. It says, "Dear Russ and Kelly, it is my sad duty to report the death of Marlin, which is very much too bad. I am very sorry, Matt."
Yeah, me too.
Says, "I'm not sure why Marlin died. He had his gills full extended when I pulled him out of the aquarium. Perhaps that is a clue. Or perhaps that is just part of piscine rigor mortis. He is actually the second clownfish that I have lost. From what I can tell from observing the aquarium, one clownfish is hosting in the anemone. The other is initially invited in, but is eventually rejected, so I still have one clownfish doing well. The anemone provides a great place for the clownfish to rest at nighttime. Otherwise, they used to sit near the top of the tank and be constantly flung around due to the currents. I am considering getting a second anemone so each clownfish will have a home. It is said to take 6 months for clownfish to fully pair bond, so that may allow the second clownfish to survive until they are getting along properly. Can you tell a girl clownfish from a boy clownfish?"
Yes. Typically what happens is that the female is larger,
mm-hmm.
the male is smaller, because clownfish, maybe not choose is the right word, but they change gender. When
I forgot.
They're sort of indeterminate, and then when they reach the age that they need to go find an anemone to host, when they're quite young, they will join a group
mm-hmm.
at an anemone, and if there's just one fish there on the anemone, it will be a female, and the one to join it will become the male.
I forgot that they did that.
And if it's a group of multiple ones, then they'll have a male, they'll have a female, and then they'll have a male, and then they'll have a whole bunch that don't really do anything yet. They stay immature.
And if something happens to the female, the male turns into the female, and one of the other ones turns into the male.
Right. Or if something happens to the male, then the next one turns into a male. So it all works out.
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. So
life is funny.
It is. In tanks, sometimes it's a little more complicated than that, because sometimes the territory can be small enough that it's hard for things to work out. So it doesn't always work out. So sometimes, I have heard, you can get aggression in a fairly small tank enough that you'll get dead fish. I don't know that that's what happened
so
in this case.
So maybe getting a second really an like enemy
it.
Would be helpful if that's part
it
of what's
be.
Going on.
It could be. But as long as the gills...
So doesn't he have... How what? Big is Matt's marine tank?
I can't remember. It seems like it's fairly large, though. I can't remember at the moment. But, yeah. The fact that the fish's gills were extended... Mm-hmm. I've seen that a couple of times in fish. Calico Jack.
It's not the dropsy, is it?
No. Dropsy is when you get fluid buildup inside the
body
cavity.
And they look
cavity.
Like a pine cone.
And they often look like
so
a pine cone when
awful.
It's serious. Yeah.
It's so horrible.
Luckily, we haven't seen it for a long time.
Yeah.
But have seen it in the past. But Calico Jack had his gills sticking out.
Did he?
Yeah. But he
Did
wasn't
he not
a
have,
clownfish.
He didn't have dropsy, though?
Nope.
Hmm.
Nope. It was very sudden. One day he was fine. The next day he wasn't.
Weird.
And his gills were sticking out. I'm not sure what it means, though. I've never figured that one out. If anybody has any information about that, that would be cool.
You know, we need to ask the fish vet, huh?
Yeah.
He says, otherwise, I am still having to clean the algae off every few days or so. I do not like this regular maintenance, although I have yet to find a reasonable solution to the problem. I am still using my Red Sea Nopox nitrate phosphate removing treatment, but so far that has not solved the problem. On the positive side, I now have my second batch of snail eggs. Interestingly, the snails only put them in the most intense current. I suspect this is so when they hatch, the snail babies are flung as far as possible away from the parents, thus removing competition for food and the potential for baby snails to become a snack for big snails.
Mm, makes sense.
That would make sense.
Mm-hmm. Or for other creatures
right.
around there.
My starfish is going along great. I must admit, having a starfish really makes the Nano Reef feel like a proper reef. There is something about watching my starfish move around on the rocks and glass that makes me feel satisfied. Starfish, I have discovered, can move surprisingly fast. When my starfish is hunting...
For food?
For food, it can easily travel 2 feet in 5 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. They have lovely sticky tentacles underneath them that they use to adhere to the rocks, something that my starfish and urchins have in common. On the subject of urchins, I can regularly see one urchin. Now, that may be because the other two are just hiding, or perhaps I have lost one. As I have no evidence to the contrary, I prefer to think that they are hiding. It's always good to think positive.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me, we used to have these fun little serpent stars. They were like the coolest things ever.
Were they the really skinny black ones, or... Those
that was a brittle star.
That was a brittle star.
The really skinny, tiny ones that are about, an inch in diameter or so,
mm-hmm.
that...
I don't know if I remember those.
They were really thin, too. They had
they
thin arms and kind of whitish or off-white
okay,
or
I think I
something
remember
like that.
Those.
And they were bioluminescent at night.
I don't know if I ever saw that. Did I ever see that?
They would make little tiny blue sparks sometimes.
Weird.
They were funny little creatures. I really liked them. They're parthenogenic, too.
So we had lots of them.
We did. We started out with one, but then we had lots and lots. Mm-hmm. They would just release babies on occasion, little tiny ones. And I had them in with the Opaula even.
Did they get along okay?
Yeah, they did.
What happened to
and
them?
They're just little detritivores that dig around in the sand and stuff, and they were just so fun. I loved them. But
what happened to them?
When we moved and we shipped things back, I guess none of them made it. Because I didn't see them after that.
Yeah.
But we did bring home, we brought Dave, our feather duster worm. At the
had
time.
Him for quite some time.
We had him for years, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, I guess that's when it happened. They didn't make it through okay. the move.
So Matt goes on, I have 4 trochus snails, 8 turbo snails, and 2 zombie snails. I mean, why did they call them zombie
you will
snails?
See.
Are they freaky looking? I am beginning to appreciate my molluscan friends all the more as I watch them munching away on algae. The zombie snails will occasionally breach the sand, coming up like a submarine out of nowhere. Or a zombie, as their name implies.
Because they just come
like
right out of the substrate.
Clawing their way out of their grave.
Yeah, exactly.
The zombie snails have the added benefit of cleaning the sand, thus reducing the chances of more cyanobacteria explosions. Does
the
he
chances.
Mean chances? Uh-huh. Sorry, it's typo. I am considering removing the glass covers on my discus aquarium. Hopefully that will allow enough light to penetrate the water and cause the red plants to have that protective reaction, e.g. growing more red pigment. My blue discus still looks real beaten up, yet she still eats when I feed them, so that is important and encouraging.
Well, that's good. And mm-hmm. at least the parasites are gone. Remember, he had parasites before
he went
to the vet and he got mm-hmm. treated.
And that worked. I'm glad that worked. Mm-hmm. He says, so my call still goes out to you, Russ and Kelly, to assist in algae management. It also goes out to all the other Aquamaxers. Do I need a new filter or other device? Is there a better organism to control it? I have found even when I did daily water changes, it did not impact the growth that much, so I'm reluctant to use that as a control method. Although I still do my regular water changes. So if anyone knows why I lost two... Or also, if anyone knows why I lost two Ocellaris clownfish, that'd be great too.
Okay.
Sorry, well, I kind of butchered that whole email.
No, I think you're fine. I wish I could tell you more about the clownfish. Did you ever notice any aggression in the clownfish? Or, I mean, that's something that I've heard that can happen, but it doesn't sound like that to me, but, you know, it's kind of hard to say, really. But anyone who has any feedback on that, I'd love to know. And I'm sure Matt would too. Since he said so. One thing that I could bring up in terms of algae, this is true in freshwater tanks, but also in marine tanks. When you have an excess of nutrients in the water, you're going to get algae. And when you have light enough, in other words, I mean, the light, the interplay of the light and the nutrients, there's enough light and enough nutrients that you're getting excess algae. So you just got the new lights, and I'm sure you want to keep those, and they sound like really awesome lights. I'm not saying you should get rid of them, but there is plenty of light available, and there are enough nutrients in the water that algae is going to take advantage of it. So what I would say is you need to get some way of pulling them out. Now, you're already working on some of that. One of the ways is you're using the resin to get rid of the nitrate and the phosphorus. Okay, that's a good thing, but what appears to be happening is that you're getting the nutrients are being produced faster than they're being removed from the water, and so algae's jumping on it. You do have some photosynthetic organisms in there, but maybe not enough. I remember you mentioning earlier, a few podcasts back, about miracle mud. Mm-hmm. And if you have that in a refugium, and you have algae growing in the refugium, macroalgae, that you can then export, basically just pull it out.
Remove the nutrients from the system.
It's a nutrient export device, basically, and that might be a good thing. I don't know exactly how you've got... you probably have a refugium if you have the miracle mud in it, and you probably have some macroalgae in it, but how much do you have? Getting a really healthy crop of that can help reduce the nutrients in the water fast enough so that it can pull them out as they're being produced, and then the algae, the microalgae that you're having issues with, doesn't have much of a chance. You can also, maybe you've already thought about this, read about this, have your refugium on a different lighting cycle than your main tank. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm trying to remember details about your tank. It seems like you had a sump, too. And correct me if I'm wrong, but if you've got your sump somewhere that you could put your refugium and you could light it at night when your other tank is not lit. You wouldn't want to do that in your bedroom if, you know, you're trying to sleep and the light's all bright. But if you have it in a cabinet or something and you could light the inside of the cabinet, you don't need really fancy expensive lights for macroalgae. You just need some bright light. Like, you can put normal fluorescent lighting above it and it'll grow. If you do that, it can sometimes help pull enough nutrients from the water that they're being removed just as fast as they're being created, so the algae, the microalgae, the pest nuisance algae, doesn't have anything
to draw on.
So it sounds to me like there's just an excess of nutrients in your water, and it's not a huge one. You're not getting like ridiculous outbreaks, but it's just enough so you're dealing with some issues, and that might just be the way to deal with it. So let us know what you're doing with your refugium and macroalgae and light cycles and so on. Maybe that'll help. And if anyone else has anything they'd like to chime in on that, that'd be great. And Here's us hoping that next time we speak to you, it will be from a distinctly cooler house.
Yes.
So, until next time, Aquariumexers.
May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquariumax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit Aquariumax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquariumax.com.